Welcome to episode 18 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we will be covering the season finale. Will You Take My Hand? But first, we have some feedback from last week, so let's open hailing frequencies. So we have some feedback for the penultimate. I should have let you say that.
That's all right.
I like that word too. So, for The War Without, The War Within, season one, episode 14. So we're going to start it off with some voicemail from Cyberman.
Hi, this is for Brian and Ruthie at Star Trek Discovery. This is Cyberman. I have a few points. I'm really sorry that Lorca is gone. I was very sorry he became a fascist pig in the end. I really was kind of hoping he was more of a freedom fighter for the Terran universe, but I guess that was too good to be true. But anyway, I'm going to miss him, regardless whether he's a jerk or not. Great character. Burnham in on the briefings for this episode, The War Without, The War Within. I think the reason she's there is because Saru probably wanted her there. Saru basically told her she was the only one who could pull off what she did on the Empress's ship. She also rescued Admiral Cornwell from the Klingon ship when Tyler had his meltdown. So I think there's a lot of good reasons for her to be in those briefings. They respect her opinion, and she's done two amazing things. She got the Discovery out of, the Mirror Universe. I was very surprised it wasn't a time travel episode as well. I like that they surprised me. I don't have any problems with the spores. It reminded me of the Genesis effect from one of the TOS's movies. The one where Khan returns, I can't remember the name, I'm sorry. Maybe it was Star Trek 3 or 2, it was 2, maybe 2. So that kind of reminded me of the Genesis effect. I really enjoyed the callback to TOS with the transporter accident and Lorca and how he got to the Mirror Universe. I don't understand what they're going to do with the spores, but they keep me guessing. I can't even predict. I also agree that George...
And unfortunately, it ends there. Through SpeakPipe, which I think is how she's submitting the feedback, it only gives you a minute and a half. So if you have more to say, you have to call back. And if you do, I'll stitch them together. But unfortunately, that's all we got. So
darn.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she had some interesting things to say there about the. She also, thought it was going to be time travel, and but now that we get this episode, I'm kind of glad it wasn't time travel. It was fascist pig Lorca. Over the weekend I didn't do a complete rewatch. I didn't get through the last. I think I stopped on episode 13 and I missed a couple that I dozed off on, in the first half. And then I never went back to watch them. So it was like a partial like 75-80% rewatch. But, knowing that Lorca is from the Mirror Universe, watching it again, it plays differently because it's like the times when he's actually like playing for Starfleet he's actually playing for Starfleet here. And then, so it seems like he's like actually trying to win the war. But when he finds out that this is the last jump, he's just like, well, screw this. I'm going back. Anyway, that's how I took it after a rewatch like that. But
yeah. I was wondering if it would be, like, so obvious rewatching.
It wasn't so obvious. I mean, there were the clues there, but he did a lot of good. And he did a lot to, try to win the war. He wasn't like he was all going for himself. But, you know, when he got back to the Mirror Universe, and he was, especially when he got back on the palace ship there,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was all for himself. But anyway, I thought it played differently. But I'm curious to hear what Cyberman thinks about this episode. So hopefully you'll send us feedback in between episodes for us. We'll be back sooner rather than later. We won't make you wait a whole 18 months or however it's going to be. We will be back way sooner than that. But we won't have an episode next week, probably, unless we get so much feedback that we can't wait. But, you didn't realize it was Cyberman.
No. I think every time I've ever seen anything, it always said Cyberman, and I never heard. I don't know. Yeah, no. Sorry. I think, I don't know. I've heard her give feedback other places, and I could have sworn every single time they always said Cyberman. Obviously, I was mishearing, and then when I finally heard the voicemail, I was like, why is her name Cyberman? Oh, I feel dumb right now. Yep. And finally, I was like, oh, she said, ma'am, that makes so much more sense.
Incorrect.
That's right.
Yes.
Oh, totally threw me off the first time I heard the voicemail and it was a woman speaking. I was very confused. Anyway, sorry about that.
What was it? You had something else in the notes there?
Oh, The Wrath of Khan was Star Trek II.
Yeah.
But the Genesis device went off. I guess it was the end of Star Trek II because it was the beginning of Star Trek III, which was the search for Spock.
Yeah.
Because he sacrificed himself at the end, and that's when you get the epic line, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Or the one!
Yeah. Yeah, and the Genesis device kind of straddles 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And,
because they launch his casket into space, as you do, and apparently it got sucked into the rebirth of that planet, what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is a slight...
Incorrect.
But about the Wrath of Khan and Nicholas Meyer, he did write it, but he was a ghostwriter on it.
Mm.
So his name is not in the credits for that film, but he did direct it.
Hmm.
So he directed it, but it was a screenplay by Jack B. Sowards and story by Harve Bennett and Jack B. Sowards. And looks like uncredited were Nicholas Meyer and Samuel A. Peeples, which I know he was a writer on the original Star Trek. I recognize that name.
All right, then.
Anyway. All right. Well, let's move on to some Twitter feedback from our friend on Twitter, Ken from Chicago. And he says, so Brian disagreed with Ruthie about Westworld, but then rewatched it and discovered something. That's actually not technically true. I've only watched Westworld once, but I watched the first two episodes of Westworld and did not like what I saw. And it was only after a lot of coaxing from Ruthie and some other friends of mine that I finally gave the rest of it a chance. And I was glad that I did eventually, but I was pretty stubborn about it for about 2 months, when you say...
Yeah, it was a little while, but
yeah,
I get it. There are some things you just can't get past. But I mean, he has limited characters on Twitter, so he can't tell the whole story.
True enough. Well, actually, what is it now? 280 characters instead of 140?
I don't know, but that's still not very many.
Well, he continues. He says, I so agree with you both. Ash's dependency on Burnham is a bad start for a relationship. Amen to that. He needs to be able to stand on his own so he can contribute to the relationship. It's less about punishing Ash and more about quarantining him. How does Saru know Ash is sleeper free or won't suffer some relapse without some serious psychological therapy? That was something I thought of myself. Something occurred to me about the Lorca Giorgio fight and her vertical kick. I cede to Ruthie's martial arts expertise and how such a kick wouldn't have any power behind it. Yet, could the mere surprise of it have shocked Lorca into loosening his grip? Maybe. If a fly buzzed into my face, it has no strength relative to me, but the surprise of it will make me jump back on reflex. So, hashtag, Ruthie's right that the strength of the vertical kick might be tiny, but the shock and awe made it work. Sorry. Hashtag shock and awe. She didn't address that. She's not wrong. Then he continues in another tweet. He says, I agree with you both 10,000% that hashtag Star Trek should progress ever forward, which highlights the inherent flaw with the powers that be making hashtag Star Trek Discovery yet another prequel series. If they want to use advanced tech, set it after hashtag Voyager, or don't claim it's the hashtag prime timeline. Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with all that. However, the show is what it is. So, you know, I think...
Too late now.
Yeah, it's too late now.
I don't understand why they always want to go back and go forward. Do stuff in the future. I mean, the future is vast and forever.
Well, I understand why there's stuff, you know, ripe for the taking in the past, but the thing is that, you know, it runs into these, like, you know, technological issues because, you know, you're dealing with now 52 years of Star Trek. So as long as you're going to keep going backward, and, you know, time in relative history goes forward and our technology, you know, increases, then we're going to have issues like this. Now, you know, some people will hear that or see that and, you know, will not accept Star Trek Discovery. And to those people, I remember a certain Saturday Night Live skit with William Shatner telling the Trekkies to get a life. Because I don't know. I think at this point, if you haven't given Star Trek Discovery a chance, you are missing out, I think. It, you know, especially with the way that they've left it, I think that this series is, you know, going to come back in season two, and you're going to get a Star Trek, I think, much like the Star Trek that you're used to, but probably with longer stories. And I think that's a good thing. So,
yeah, I think the main problem with doing prequel stuff is that, and, you know, saying it's the same timeline, is that that's the future of the past. Like, that's the past's future. We want a future for us, not for the past, the people that were back in the whatever, you know, XYZ fill in the blank timeline. It just never works out as well, I think. But hey.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when you go look at the, you know, the City of Tomorrow short films and things like that. And I imagine that they were, you know, at Disneyland or something like that too, you know, where you see these, like, here's things that are going to be in the future, and they never get it right. And when we look 30 years into our future, we're probably not going to get it right either at this point, you know? So, I mean, even if you go back, because I recently watched it, the episode, the two-part episode, Past Tense from Deep Space Nine, and I'll say this, sorry, Kim, we're bringing up Deep Space Nine again. I'll try to come up with a Next Generation reference tonight. But anyway, in that two-parter, they're talking about the Bell riots, which are supposed to happen in 2024, okay? And they got a lot of stuff wrong on there. Like, they talk, like, the one media mogul guy had, like, I don't know, he was on channel 97 or something like that. I can't remember the channel 90. That's what it was. And that's not a thing, you know? So they got that wrong. And, you know, there's so many things that they get wrong. And it's when you look at 1966, you know, Star Trek, I mean, they got a lot wrong. And there's a lot of ways, especially with computers and that we've advanced far beyond what they showed there. And that's just, you know, that's the way it's going to be. So anyway, I agree with you. I would rather see it 25th century, but now that we have Star Trek Discovery, that is almost a reset of it. And, you know, everything past this is going to be able to advance. It's just, anyway, it'll be interesting when we see Enterprise next season, which I hope we do. And they don't just like tease it and then buy Enterprise at the start of the first episode. We never actually see it.
Huh.
All right. Well, we move on to Todd.
All right. Todd says, I know the finale is Sunday night now. I'm not ready for it to be over. I have a theory. Any chance the Prime Universe that we have been watching prior to these few Mirror Universe eps is maybe not the Prime Universe as far as the rest of the Star Trek franchise is concerned, but a third universe that we haven't seen before this show happened? Almost like this USS Discovery main universe is more like Earth 3. Last opportunity to explain why we don't have the spore drive in Prime Universe and other continuity issue explainers like the Klingon look. And if Kronos gets destroyed Sunday, then we can say, oh, that is not the main universe Kronos, so it's fine. Or if everyone on USS Discovery dies Sunday, that's fine. It wasn't the main universe versions of them. Yes? No? Am I crackerjack crazy?
I don't think you're crackerjack crazy.
Well, I can't make any judgments based on just this.
Yeah. That's true. Todd could be crackerjack crazy, even if this makes some sense. That's a good point. Anyway, I think that what we see here, there's enough there that makes me think that it is the same Prime universe. I know that several things have changed, and we'll talk about the Klingons, you know, over and over again for as long as the series goes on. And, you know, at this point, there's not much that we can do with that. But Ruthie and I believe, both agree with the fact that they should have never changed the Klingons. It makes no sense that they did that. And if they hadn't done that, so much more of the show would have, I think, been accepted. And not, especially in the first few episodes, annoyed people. It annoyed me, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. It still annoys me, but yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah. It still annoys me too, but I'm more accepting of it because, you know, the rest of the story is good. I mean, the Klingon story is good. It's just they changed so much about them that wasn't so good. Anyway, but I think that you could make the case that things would have been different if Discovery had traveled back in time to the place that they, you know, came from, I guess, even if they, you know, don't try to erase any part of the war. They just, you know, go back 9 months and get the cloaking device to Starfleet. Or sorry, not the cloaking device, but the cloaking
detector.
Yeah. Yeah. Cloaking device detector or breaker. So anyway, there's definitely a case there, but I think at this point, I think we have to accept that this is Prime Universe.
Yeah.
All right, well, we have one more bit of feedback for last week from Joseph. He says, I am torn between the sassy food processor versus the silent one when Tyler got his food. The commentary was funny as long as it didn't apply to my food choices, but I would laugh at others.
Yeah, that's true.
I hadn't noticed that Tyler's was silent. I should have paid more attention to that. When I go back and watch that episode, I will pay special attention to that part.
It didn't say anything. He just walked up to it and it just gave him food. Whereas before, someone was getting something and it was like making commentary on the health or non-health benefits of said choice.
Yes. Well, I remember it was like, you know, one delicious, healthy breakfast burrito or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving on to the finale. Season 1, episode 15 was titled, Will You Take My Hand? This story was written by Akiva Goldsman, who's one of the executive producers, and then executive producers and co-showrunners Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts, and they, specifically Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts, wrote the teleplay, which is, of course, the script, and is directed by Akiva Goldsman. So a little bit of news for this week, shipwide announcement. All right. Well, Brian Fuller, I don't know what's gotten into this guy, because he's just like leaving shows left, right, and center. It was announced last week that he and his writing partner, Hart Hansen, have left the Amazing Stories reboot, which is coming to an Apple device near you. Apparently, the split is amicable, but there was some discussion about how Apple will not have sex and violence in their content. So there was some disagreement over that.
Hmm.
So, all right. So this next thing, I don't think you can call it a spoiler, but it certainly did concern me, and I didn't put it on the Facebook group until after the episode aired, because I was worried about Doug Jones. Says that Doug Jones, Beanie Feldstein, Jack McDorman, and Mark Proksh, I don't know how to say that name, have all joined the FX half-hour comedy pilot What We Do in the Shadows, which I guess is based on a movie. I don't know the movie. The details of their roles are being kept under wraps, but all four will potentially recur on the show should it get ordered to series. Now, I think that's a clue there, potentially recur. That doesn't say that he would be a regular on the show, and a lot of actors will be on the main cast of a show and recur on another show. So this doesn't mean that Doug Jones and Saru is leaving Discovery, but it certainly did catch my attention when I read the headline.
Yep.
I don't recognize this one. Is this something you put in here?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was looking up stuff, and I came across an article that just basically had some Star Trek Discovery Easter eggs from the finale.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that it mentioned was, I guess I didn't see it either time I watched it, but I wasn't necessarily specifically looking for it. But there was someone in a tattoo parlor that had mm-hmm. spots that looked like they were a Trill.
Yep. Trill female.
Okay. So then it wasn't Curzon. But right. I was thinking, well, maybe it was Dax, because Curzon Dax spent a lot of time on Kronos, even, and helped negotiate the Khitomer Accords. So, yeah. But I guess it was a female Trill, then it wouldn't have been Dax, because that would have been Curzon, I think, at the time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think,
although I can't remember exactly when the Khitomer Accords were signed, but
I thought that was around Star Trek VI.
I don't know. I can't remember. I just remember it was solidified, I guess, peace between them.
Yeah.
Between the Federation and the Klingon Empire. So
yeah. The character that was getting the tattoo, she looked sort of like Ezri Dax. Like had a similar kind of build and hairdo and hair color. Obviously, it wasn't Ezri Dax, but she reminded me of Ezri Dax. Yes, another Deep Space Nine reference. Sorry, Kim.
Sorry, no! Not sorry.
Okay, Jean-Luc, we will we'll throw you in there. Believe me. One other thing came up, and it was, and I watched this today because I hadn't. I saw about it, but I hadn't actually watched it. Apparently, Comedy Central's Drunk History did a little thing, you know, celebrating Black History Month. The encounter that Nichelle Nichols, when she was, you know, on after the, I think it was after the first season of Star Trek, she was planning to leave the show, and she went to a dinner that Martin Luther King was on, and that he basically convinced her that she needed to stay on the show.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And she's talked about that a lot. She said that because he told her that it shows Black people in the future. Mm-hmm. So she had to stay.
Yeah.
Or it was so great or something like that. And so she stayed.
Yeah. And I think he was right. I mean, I think that that role was a
not pivotal, just Black people, but a Black woman.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. That role was a pivotal role in, you know, and it inspired a lot of people, and, you know, not just Black people, but, you know, women and minorities, you know,
other Black women, specifically Whoopi Goldberg.
Right. That's right. And in that video, it mentioned Mae Jemison, you know, who went on to become an astronaut, and she was a big inspiration. So I could just imagine what Star Trek would have been like if she had left. You know, so especially Michael Burnham. I mean, Sinequa Martin Green. I think her role now is definitely a tribute, I think, to Nichelle Nichols. All right, well, let's get on to this episode. So, what's your rating for the season finale of "Will You Take My Hand"?
Well, going to give this episode I'm gonna give it a 9.4 Isix out of 10.
All right, I'm going to give it a, well, I'm gonna explain this one, but when you hear Mark's voicemail, think of me. I'll just say that because I had a similar thing. So I would give it as a whole a 9, and I'll say 9 starships of my dreams. So, and to explain that, and, you know, you'll hear the same kind of thing with Mark. I didn't love this episode, but the last part of the episode, you know, with everybody, you know, getting their awards and Burnham getting her thing to go to commander, and then
her commission
back, expunged record, and then how it ends with the Enterprise and then theme at the end, that last part, I think I would give a 12 out of 10.
Yeah. Me so, too, when I heard that old school in music, I was like, oh my gosh,
that was my reaction to the whole thing. When I saw the Enterprise there, I'm like, oh, it's C-17. It's going to be 1701. Come on. And then, you know, that they say it's Captain Pike. And I was like, oh, and then we see that glorious starship come, and it just looks so amazing, you know, cause it was the classic Enterprise, but it looked better. Like it was tastefully updated for the 21st century. You know, that's my take on it. It wasn't an exact replica, but it was, I think, an improvement based on today's, sensibilities and designs. All right. Well, we've got We've got a lot of ratings from people. First is Eddie. He gives this episode 9.8 space whale kebabs. Poor Gormagander.
Poor Tilly.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, what? What?
Yeah, can you imagine if she had been fed a kelpian?
Oh, man. Yep. We can bond over having had to eat despicable things.
All right, next.
Okay. Malika says 10 out of 10, Captain Pikes.
James says, I'm giving this episode 9.5 narrow-throated Tillies.
It was her esophagus.
Yes, it was her esophagus.
Oh, my goodness. Kyle says, 9 out of 10, high as a kite Tillies.
Kim gives it 8 out of 10 volcanic bong hits.
Oh, gosh. Clint says, this is the weakest of the 7 episodes since the new year. I give it 6.8 medals of honor out of 10.
It's worth saying there were only 6 episodes since the new year, but not to be nitpicky.
Well, I agree. It was still the weakest.
So Mark gives it 7. He split his rating into 2. He says for the whole episode, he gives it 7.5 narrow esophaguses. But the last 30 seconds, he gives 10 out of 10 Isix for your thoughts.
Ha, ha, ha. All right. Fred from the Netherlands says 8.5 out of 10 sex workers in the bar. Oh, that was funny.
Lastly is Rick from Cleveland. He gives it 9.8 out of 10 distress calls from Captain Pike. All right, so it's now time for...
Yes!
All right, why don't you read Nathaniel's.
All right, Nathaniel says, Tilly smoking ash. Clint Howard cameo. Cool scenes of an Orion outpost on the Klingon homeworld, and the way they wrote off Ash. I didn't see that coming, but I think he can make a very good ambassador.
Yeah, I thought of that, you know, that he could become ambassador to Kronos. Clint Howard, that guy has been in Star Trek since he was a little kid, because he played, was it Baylock or Balok?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. That was in that article that I was...
The Corbomite Maneuver, which was one of very early in season 1, and I really liked that. That was an example of Captain Kirk using his wits, you know. But he was in that. He was also that very episode I mentioned earlier, Past Tense. Clint Howard was in that on Deep Space Nine, and he played a Ferengi, although they didn't know that those aliens were Ferengis, in Enterprise. So only Voyager and Next Gen has he not been on, but he's been on every other iteration of Star Trek. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's been in a ton of other stuff as well.
Mark Olivier said... He actually had the exact same reaction that I had at the end of the episode. He says, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then he says, yes, or should I say,
yes.
That is Star Trek.
Yes. And yes. Then, yep. Malika reacts to Mark Olivier's post by saying, pretty much sums it up for me. We watched it live for the first time ever, in forever. As soon as I heard the hail, I knew we were getting the Enterprise, and yet I was still shocked and thrilled when I heard the voice. So much yes. Way to go. Way to get us wanting a season 2, like, no! And she also said, gah!
Yeah, I was wondering if she was referring to gah, if there was I didn't see if there was Gah at the Orion outpost, but there probably was.
I'm sure there was, but I didn't see any, and I don't think that's what she was talking about anyway. I don't know.
Well, I'll ask her, but if you don't know, Gah was something we saw a lot on Next Generation. That is like sort of Klingon mealworms or something like that. It's like spaghetti, but it moves around.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. James is next. He says, the Federation ideal is the Phoenix rising from the ashes. The redemption arc is complete for this season, and the critics of the darkness of this season can now be silenced. another yes is the beautiful yet classic retrofitted NCC 1701. Tilly just being Tilly. Just so much fun. And then the last one is he agrees with Nathaniel. He says the Clint Howard cameo.
Yep. All right. Then we have our very own Tilly saying her yes is Cadet Tilly for so many reasons. She's just awesome. Everything that she says and does are a joy to behold. And I love that she's had like a dozen different hairstyles from straight to curly. She's all about fixing her hair to the situation, and I'm here for it. And I have to second that completely, totally. Yes to the previously on being spoken in Klingon. That was dope. And yes to the ending with the Captain Pike Enterprise and the original series theme song. That was perfect.
Yeah, that was perfect. And
I agree.
Yeah, I was just like, at first, I'm looking at the screen and I'm thinking, do I have like a Star Trek video playing in another tab or something? And then I realized it was actually the playing, you know. So, yeah, I thought that was awesome. And I could tell by the end of it that it was a different rendition of it.
Like, mm-hmm. But they still had vocals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the bongos.
Yeah.
I love it. Oh my gosh. It makes me.
Yeah. Like, I know some. Well, there's always going to be someone that criticizes it and says, oh, it's, you know, fan service or whatever. But it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so? Isn't that what you've been waiting for? The whole damn series? All the talk about it not being Star Trek? Well, buddy, it's Star Trek, all right. We saw the Enterprise. We heard the theme song. Get with it, man. It's Star Trek.
Sometimes there's nothing wrong with fan service.
I agree. Okay. Kim, she says, cool leather away mission disguises. Yeah, and she said, low lives. Does leather mean low life in the future?
I guess so.
Giorgio lives to fight another day. Yeah, to that, I was pleasantly surprised that they didn't kill her off. I was expecting her to die. Tilly, everything she does and says.
Yep. Everything. All right, Rick from Cleveland says, so much awesome in this episode. Clint freaking Howard. This guy's been showing up in Star Trek since he was 7 years old. So many Easter eggs, tortured Betazoids, tattooed Trill, Orions, Khan's earbugs being grilled, and of course, stoned Tilly.
Yeah, I didn't notice the Khan's earbugs being grilled, but I had seen that more than one place after the episode. Well, we kind of, that's it for our listener yeses. Do you have any additional yeses?
You mean a yes that wasn't already said?
Yes!
Let's see, that was said. Oh, Tilly. Everything Tilly. I really like the jump into the cave. I thought the jump into the cave was cool and deserving of a yes.
I agree with that. I would put, and I'm surprised nobody put this down, but how the bridge crew all stood up and said, we're not going to do this. I think that was a turning point, I think, for Starfleet. that they would not compromise their ideals. And Burnham kind of, I mean, you could see it in that scene that Burnham learned from her mistake and did things the right way and convinced everyone that what she was saying was the right way and versus what she tried to do on the Shenzhou and knock out basically Giorgio so that, she could fire first at the Klingons. I liked how they essentially stopped the Federation from, I think, doing something that they could never take back. Because once they would do something like that, I think that would forever change the way the Federation and Starfleet acted. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And so, I concur.
Yeah. Do you have anything else?
No, but I still think Michael was right at the beginning of the war, but she went about it the wrong way, maybe. But I think she was right. But I feel like the situation that they're preventing right now is completely different. I mean, you're talking about the destruction of a planet versus firing first on a ship. Not really the same, in my opinion. And I think that when you're dealing with a new race or a new species or whatever, you have to find a way to communicate with them in a language that they understand, which is what the Vulcans did because the Vulcans understood that. Like, when you are trying to teach someone something, you teach them in the way that they can learn, not just the way that you want to teach and hope that they can learn it. So I think that's the same when you're trying to communicate with someone that you haven't communicated before. You have to find a way that they will understand you. And maybe it's not the way that you always do things. But I like I said, I think maybe she went about it the wrong way. But she was desperate and had to make a split-second decision, blah, blah, blah. I think that if she had succeeded in trying to or in accomplishing what she was trying to accomplish, that there might not have been a war.
Right.
But I think destroying a planet is just not even in the same ballpark.
Well, I agree, but I don't think that that's the point of it. I think that the point of it is Burnham in the first thing, she didn't go about it the right way. So if she had done a better job convincing her captain and, you know, the rest of her crew to support that decision to fire first, that would have been the right way to handle it. And the right way to handle this was how she handled it. Basically, she got the support of her crew. And
yeah,
it was,
but still, that's not the same. It's easy to convince people to not commit genocide. It's not.
Okay,
I mean, it's,
that's true.
It's not easy to convince people that you need to fire first. So it's, again, still not the same. I mean,
yeah, I agree with that on that point. What I'm saying is that I'm not talking about the overall thing. I'm talking more about how she gained the support before she did it. She found a better way, and she was able to convince everyone of that better way. And I think that was a better way to handle things.
Yeah, but how exactly? I don't know. You're talking about what I'm talking about. How is she going to convince people to fire first? Like, how is she going to go about doing that in the few seconds that they had to make a decision or whatever, however long it was? I can't remember. How is she going to convince people to go? Basically, at the end of the season situation, she's convincing people to stand by their morals. At the beginning of the season situation, she would have had to have convinced people to completely go against everything that they stand for ever.
Right.
Because we come in peace, blah, blah, blah. That's how they are. So I understand what you're saying about how she did grow from that experience, but I just feel like that more people should recognize that had she succeeded in what she had made an attempt to do, there likely would not have been a war. Because yes, firing first is anathema to the Federation, but the Federation in turn got desperate enough, as she was at the beginning of the season, to do something that was even way worse. Anyway.
All right. Do you have any more yeses?
Belabored that enough. Well, just the again Star Wars vibe I got from the "You're either with me or against me. Only the Sith deal in absolutes," which, of course, in itself is an absolute. Anyway.
So in this case, the Star Wars vibe was a good thing?
Well, it's always a good thing.
Okay.
But it was just, I got it again. Something I can't remember. There was something last episode. I can't remember what it was. Last two or three. And I kept getting Star Wars vibes off of it. But again, with the "you're either with me or against me," I don't like that either. I don't like absolutes like that. Like, just because I'm not with you does not mean I am against you. I feel like people who make those kinds of statements are
against you.
No, they're well, it's a manipulative
ultimatum
thing to say, I think. Well, no, that's not what I was going to say. Feel like the people who, I feel like dishonest people say things like that, I guess, maybe. I don't know. It's a manipulation, and I don't like it. People say you can either be this or that. Like, well, no, actually. So anyway, but I was mainly wanting to bring up the Star Wars vibe. But yeah, that's it, I think.
All right, let's move on to the nose.
No!
Yes. All right. Nathaniel says, and I agree, the wait for season 2.
Yeah.
No!
Because there was one thing. Did you get to see After Trek this time?
I've watched a little bit of it, but then I kind of listened to the most of the rest of it. But
Well, the one thing that I was hoping they were going to say, they didn't say, which was to say when Star Trek Discovery was coming back. And I guess I understand why they didn't say it, because, of course, the first season took, you know, quite a bit longer than what they said. And, you know,
yeah, that's because they had the showrunner.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. Going on. Yeah. Well, anyway, I think most of us believe that it won't be back until 2019, unfortunately. Although I don't know if that's actually been confirmed or not, but in any case, they didn't say when it's coming back. So we're going to be waiting a while. We think, anyway.
Yeah, I would guess it's probably not coming back in the fall.
I would agree with that.
Which is sad.
All right. I'll read the next one since that was so short. James, he has a few here. He says, the fact that the show just ignored Klingon plot points established in Enterprise with the augment virus, giving him the more human appearance in TOS. This part truly is a retcon. I'm willing to overlook it because the show is so good, but I have to be honest that I'll truly never get over that part. On the other hand, Trek has retconned before, so it is what it is.
Yeah, I say, I'm right there with you, bud. I think we each have our own sticking points, and this is one for me.
Yeah, it's funny how much they have mentioned Enterprise in this, and again, sorry, Kim. We gotta find something to say about Voyager in here. Because she mentioned in the Facebook group that we never talk about Next Generation or Voyager on this show. And believe me, we love them both. And you know, I nearly sold a story to Next Generation, so of course I love it. Anyway. It's just funny how so many things that they've mentioned from Enterprise, but like this is something that they ignore.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll say it. That's the Klingons are the one thing about this show that is my major issue. And I don't see it going away. And, you know, you can go with the retconning, the augment virus, but just the whole thing. I don't understand why they did it. And it's, to me, the one thing that I don't think they should have done. And I'm okay with the visual changes. I'm okay with the uniforms changing. It's the Klingons that, like, honestly, I would not have done that. And I really don't know what the heck they were thinking when they decided to change the look of the Klingons so radically. I mean, we see, you know, the Tellarites and the Andorians, and they've changed, but not the extent the Klingons have. I mean, you know, like, I saw another, like, side view of Laurel, and she's got this, like, you know, this huge
noggin.
Yeah. Her head is so huge, and, you know, I don't understand why they did it. And I have to say that, from what I understand, that's solely on Brian Fuller. You know, so
I'm telling you, I want to put my own mark on this, and that's what I'm going to do, or my own stamp on this, and that's how I'm going to do it.
Yep.
Which I'm like, that was a mistake.
It was. You've got 30 years of the Klingons looking a certain way. Don't change that. They're already established. So anyway, we're beating a dead horse.
It's a dead horse that's going to keep on getting beat, though.
Yep. Honestly, it's was not a good idea. James also has a second point, and he says, not as action-packed as I had expected for the main plot points of the episode. Yeah, I was expecting more fighting, you know, and we really didn't get that. Like, we didn't get any space battles. We didn't get any fighting down on the planet. It was more of a quest than anything else. And it was a different kind of episode than I expected, at least for the first, you know, half of it, or two thirds. So I can concur, James.
All right. Okay. Once again, Tilly says, my one nope was that ridiculous wig they keep making Sonequa Martin-Green wear. I mean, really? That thing is just the worst. A, her actual hair is gorgeous. Why can't she just have her own hair? B, yes, I know they filmed this in Toronto, but to be honest, there are some really fantastic wig makers in this town. They couldn't find one? I've got phone numbers. They should call me. I can hook them up. And three, on After Trek, she was sporting her own natural hair in a Michael-esque haircut. Have they started filming season 2 yet? I have no idea, but if she is willing to cut her hair, they should have just gone with that to begin with. Her hair on After Trek was perfect. That Michael wig, not so much.
To that end, like, I thought that I know in the pilot, in the first two episodes, and in scenes where we see her on Vulcan or coming off of Vulcan and all that, she's obviously wearing a wig there. But I thought the rest of the time that she wasn't wearing a wig. So I don't know.
I can't say. I have no idea.
Yeah. So, but
bad at spotting that stuff.
Yeah, Tilly, if you have some more detail there, let us know. And you know, I'm just pleading dumb male that I can use a wig for that matter. But
I think for gents, they call it a toupee.
Yes, my dad wore a toupee, and it's because of that that I don't.
Oh, that's funny. Sometimes I really want to wear a wig. That way I wouldn't have to mess with my hair. I could just shave my head bald and wear my wig. Oh, man. Yep, that's right. Sometimes I want to shave my head.
Or should I say,
I think it's more of a wah-wah. Yeah, something like that. Anyway.
Kim says, voiceovers that aren't log entries. I heard a few people say that, actually. Spore drive ambiguity? Yeah, I kind of... Yeah, because they didn't completely shut the door on the spore drive. And then she says, weird alien strip club? No. I thought the whole thing with the Orions and all that, it just, I don't know. It was cool to see the Orions, but who...
You didn't want to see that much of them?
Well, I don't know. It wasn't what I was going to the Klingon homeworld for. I was expecting them to have to go in disguise or something like that. I guess kind of maybe that's why they didn't do that. I don't know. Was it just me, or did it seem like the Orions were slightly different color?
Less green.
Yeah, yeah. Because there were a few times when I looked at them that I couldn't tell right away that they were Orion.
Yep, that's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
I forgot, actually. I was like, man, where are they? Oh, yeah, they're supposed to be Orions. Huh. They don't look very green.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? Maybe it was just bad lighting. I don't know.
Could be.
Something. Some crazy. Okay, Rick from Cleveland says, the overall conclusion to the Klingon War seemed a bit anticlimactic. I don't know what I was expecting, but that tripped Kornos with the fate of the Federation on the line. I don't know. I think I was expecting something more. I also felt like Tyler going off with Laurel at the end did not make sense. He spent the past few episodes trying to put Vok behind him to embrace his Klingon side in the end seems odd. I have to agree with that. I did write down, I don't think I quite understand why Tyler is leaving to go with Laurel.
Probably because in Starfleet, he really didn't have a future. I mean, they weren't going to, you know, say, oh, come back, be chief of security, you know.
Yeah,
after what
but
he did.
That's kind of like saying, well, I can't do this thing, so I'm going to do this other crazy, completely unrelated thing that makes no sense. I don't know. I can't think of a good analogy right now.
All right. Well, it's time for our nose. So, do you have any nose?
Not really.
All right. Well, I have two. One is, I'm going to say these out of order from what I have in the notes here. Not naming Saru as the captain. I was really expecting, as part of the ending, that they would make Saru the captain. So the fact that they're going to Vulcan to basically, I think, have the next captain board, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the captain is Vulcan, by the way. Still, that suggests that it's not going to be Saru. Unless, of course, that captain dies, which could happen. But I think if anything, you know, especially based on the first, you know, the news item I had, I have to think that it might be a contract issue. They kept it open because I think a lot of the actors, I don't know this for certain, but I have heard that Jason Isaac, just had a one season contract. So, I mean, assuming that the other actors also had one season contracts, that kind of leaves CBS some options, and they don't have to name who the who's going to be captain. It could end up being Saru for all they know. But that's what I tend to think why that happened that way. So, but I think Saru deserves to be captain. I think he would be a great captain for Discovery. So I'm still kind of pulling for that in the end. My second no, I think, was a bad editing choice, I think, of Burnham's speech near the end, interspersed with, you know, the award ceremony. I think the whole way, here's, you know, Cornwell, you know, giving out these awards, and, you know, for each thing, you almost have, like, Burnham saying, you know, yes, we're Starfleet. And then, you know, here's the next one. That's who we are. And it's like, shut up. In between. I didn't like how they edited that together. It was kind of, at first it was kind of confusing. I was like, why does she keep talking in the middle of this ceremony? And then I realized, oh, okay. They just did some fancy editing here, but I think it would have been better if they had just kind of kept all the awards together and kept her speech together. So,
yeah, I thought it was cool because she was talking in the beginning. She was telling that story, so it tied it back to the beginning for me.
Yeah, and I think the story at the beginning was actually part of her speech, which...
That's what I'm saying. That's she was giving the speech in the beginning. We just didn't know it yet.
Yeah, the speech itself I didn't have a problem with. It was that it was interspersed with the awards. I think it would have been better if they had just, you know, let her say her speech together and then give the awards together. That's what I mean.
But she... It was also in the beginning, though. The speech was part of the beginning.
I'm not talking...
You didn't find that confusing?
No. I'm not talking about that part. I think that part could be left in there. But the... I would just... At the last part, the parts of the speech, I would leave those parts of the speech together and give the awards together. You know? Or, you know, have her talking and them giving the awards without, you know, the things that were said. I don't know. There's just ways they could have done it that would have been better, I think.
I didn't have any problem with it. I've seen that kind of thing done before, and I liked it. So I didn't see any problems.
All right. So we're done with no's?
I think so.
Let's open Hailing Frequencies then for our feedback. All right, let's go to Mark's voicemail.
Hey, Ruthie. Hey, Brian. Mark from Ontario, Canada here with my feedback for the season one finale, Will You Take My Hand? I've broken my rating into two here. I give the overall episode a 7.5 narrow esophagus, but I give the last 30 seconds of the episode 10 out of 10 Isaacs for your thoughts. Wow, what a great way to finish an episode. I mean, when that communications officer was saying he was having trouble decoding the message and you saw the call sign start coming in and it said NCC-17, man, I jumped out of my seat there and I saw, like, no way, they're bringing the Enterprise in. And sure enough, Captain Pike. Wow, I can't wait for next season. I wonder who they're going to get to play Pike. And I wonder if that means we're going to get to see Spock as well. Because if we go by the timeline and we know the history of Star Trek, Spock served under Pike for, what was it, 11 years, 4 months, and 5 days? Which means at the time of this encounter, Spock should be on the Enterprise. So man, oh man, how long do we have to wait for season 2? Okay, on with the rest of my feedback. Now, anybody that's part of the Facebook group, you might have seen I posted a very long theory before this episode aired on what I thought would happen in the finale. And although my theory wasn't completely right, it did have an awful lot of similarities to what actually played out. So I was quite happy with that. And if you really want to know what theory I came up with, you should really be joining the Facebook group, because we're having a blast in there. Okay, Turbolift down, then Turbolift up. Turbolift down. I didn't like the fact that Tyler on the away mission had a sidearm. With everything they've gone through, I know that it's... Georgiou or Empress or whatever that was bringing him along, but I don't think Tyler should have had a sidearm. Now, overall, I gave this episode a lower rating than the last few because I thought the pace was just really slow. A lot of slow conversations and dialogue that, I don't know, it just took me out of the episode. So that's why I rated it down a little bit. Now, another thing I didn't really like was the fact that last week, I was so happy that Michael had turned down Tyler or had told him that with everything that's happened, she just couldn't be with him. And yet, at the end of this episode, it seems like they didn't get back together, but she reconciled with him. And I just thought this was way too fast. So I didn't really appreciate that. And the other thing I didn't really care for was Michael's monologue. The episode started off with her monologuing and it finished off, or not finished off, but right before that ending sequence, it was more monologues by Michael. And I'm not a big fan of that sort of thing, especially when she's telling a completely different story in order to relate to the current story going on. It's like, I just want to see the current story. I don't care about this other story you're telling. So I didn't really appreciate that. Now, my Turbolift up moments, Tilly. Man, I started off this season not liking Tilly at all. And now she is one of my, if not the favorite character on this series. I mean, from the minute she walked into that room, saw Georgiou, started giggling like a giddy schoolgirl, then realizing how, and that was hilarious, how she realized that this wasn't her, that this was the Emperor. and then trying to give that Terran salute. And then later on Kronos, she's the tough enforcer, and then she's the grossed out girl when she's spitting out the food, and then inhaling the smoke and getting high, and Tilly just being Tilly whenever she wakes up and she catches that guy trying to cut open the briefcase, and her immediate reaction is, shame on you. I just love her now. And I am so happy that she has been accepted into the command training program. Tilly, you have a bright future ahead of you. Now, another turbo lift up moment is the fact that Philippa is still going to be out there. She's not going to be part of the crew or anything like that, but just the fact that we can someday in the future run into her again gives me high hopes for the series. And my final turbo lift up is, although one of my turbo lift downs was Michael's monologue, I did absolutely love her speech to the Admiral when they were on the bridge and they realized that Starfleet was in league with the plan. And Michael's speech to the Admiral was great. I love that. Okay, some overall thoughts on the episode. Who's this new captain they were going to Vulcan to pick up? Michael gets pardoned and gets her rank back. And Saru is currently the acting captain. But they're going to Vulcan to pick up somebody else? Now I'm hoping that this ending to this episode sidelines that. And along the way, they're going to realize that either Saru or Michael should be captain of Discovery. Because I really don't want to see a Vulcan in the command chair. Now, it really didn't take long for Georgiou to be exposed. I mean, right off the bat, Saru and Michael start grilling her and the whole bit. It came about much faster than I expected. I'm glad it did. I really didn't want Discovery to be under her rule for very long, so I'm glad it did turn out the way it did. Not to mention, it would have been pretty hard for her to pass herself off as Prime Georgiou the way she was acting. Talking to her bridge crew that way, calling the Klingons animals. Acting like the dictator that she actually was. Now, with the whole plan they set in motion, or at least the plan that Michael and Saru and Tyler and all them thought they were going ahead with, I don't understand why they needed to get into a dormant volcano. Yes, they would jump into a huge cavern in the cave, but I thought their plan was to map out the surface of the planet and find strategic military locations for targets. Why did they think they had to get into dormant volcanoes? Or was that simply a way to move the drone around the planet without it being spotted? I didn't quite understand that. And I am really surprised that Starfleet, yes, I know they had their back against the wall and they were desperate, but I'm really surprised that Starfleet agreed to a plan that would annihilate an entire planet. Now, one thing I didn't see is turning over the bomb to Laurel and letting her go free. First of all, that was a huge, huge gamble that the Klingons would actually listen to her. But it's when she actually addressed the Klingons that I don't get. She holds up this thing in her hand and says that there's a bomb on Kronos and we unite the houses or else, and all the Klingons fell in line? Why didn't somebody just shoot her or kill her? It's not like she said she had a dead man switch that if anything happens to me, this bomb goes off. She had a detonator in her hand, so just shoot her, do something, get that detonator away from her, and then continue the war. So I just thought that was all a little too easy and convenient. And I was a little disappointed they didn't address the spore drive more. I know at the end, Stamets says that Starfleet is committed to finding a non-human interface. So does that mean that he's no longer going to be piloting it, but the spore drive is still going to exist? At some point, they have to get rid of it. So I'm hoping they do that early on in season 2. Well, I can tell you that Star Trek Discovery has easily become one of, if not my favorite television show from the past several years. It has been amazing, and I really feel bad for all those Star Trek fans who just didn't want to pony up the money for CBS All Access. I hope they hear all the hype that it's getting and that they get on board, because this series is well worth it. Well, I want to take just a quick second to thank you, Brian, Ruthie, and Adam for putting this podcast together. It's been a lot of fun submitting feedback and being part of your community, and I can't wait to continue in season 2. Until then, this is Mark from Ontario, Canada, one to beam up.
That was pretty cool. I think in regards to the spore drive, I feel like that might be something that just kind of will fade away. Because if they can never find an interface that's not a human interface, then at some point in time, I would imagine that they would just give up. And it would be something that, it would be like a Betamax. Even though we still talk about Betamax or an 8-track. We still talk about it sometimes, but after, I don't know, a couple hundred years, I imagine that maybe no one would talk about that kind of stuff anymore. So that to me would explain why we had never really heard of it in any of the later Star Trek. I don't know. That obviously can't explain why it's never mentioned in the original series, but it just kind of seems like it's maybe a technology that will just kind of fade away. I don't know.
I don't know either. It's possible. I would think that, especially, you know, if the tardigrades are hard to find. But then again, you know, like if they make the drive, you know, top secret or whatever. But I still go back to Voyager. that's the one thing, because, you know, I would think Voyager was in a situation where, you know, what were they, 70,000 light years from home, I think?
Hmm.
I would kind of think that, yeah.
Incorrect.
Oh, I didn't mean
apparently
to do that.
Apparently, it's not 70,000 light years from home.
I accidentally
from your computer.
Yeah. Yeah, I accidentally said that.
Incorrect.
Who's asking you? Anyway, so to that end, I think that with Voyager as far away as they were, if Starfleet had been able to get a message to Voyager, which eventually they did, you would think, hey, we've got a solution for you. Why don't you build this Spore drive? We'll send you all of the, you know, information. But what was said earlier, that's what happens when you, you know, go back and do a prequel like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was...
It's the inherent problem with the prequel.
Yep. But then again, you know, they could have gotten away with that by just not making the Spore drive.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have much less of a problem with the Spore drive than I do with the Klingons, so I'll just say that much. I will say to you, Mark, you've reversed your Tilly. Because I remember you even thought of her to be
Jar Jar-esque.
Yeah. Thought that she'd be the Jar Jar Binks of the show. she is a standout, and it's just, she's got such great timing, and that's why, you know, I said a few weeks ago that I think Mary Wiseman is going to be a big star someday. Huge. I could see her, you know, doing, you know, comedy roles in movies like what's her name? Oh, I can't think of her name.
I don't know.
The one that Mike and Molly.
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy, yeah. I could see her, you know, doing those kind of roles. That would, I think, suit her. But I could see her doing sitcoms as well. So, anyway, Giorgio, I wanted to say this. I mean, she didn't even try to fit in.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought she was going to try to, you know, put a fast one on the crew, and, you know, someone like, Detmer would, you know, have to kind of, I think she would be quick to realize that, or have suspicions that she could have been from the Mirror Universe, given the fact that they were in the Mirror Universe, but she didn't even try. I mean, from the first moment she says something on the bridge, it's like, oh, geez, she's not even trying to hide it. And then, you know, she says, like, what'd she say? Scared Kupian.
Makes tough Kupian.
And I loved Saru's comeback to that.
Mm-hmm.
I am so tough that I am unpalatable. Laurel. Okay, so Mark was saying that surprising that no one challenged her or anything like that. I would say that was somewhat weak. You know, I mean, did they say that? I think they said that it was triggered to Laurel.
Or biometric sense something.
I mean, I could see if it was like something like what they had on Lost, where, you know, every so many cycles or whatever, every so many minutes you have to put in a code.
You have to push the button.
Yeah. Yeah.
The numbers.
Yeah. But I mean, they kind of just, it was kind of a quick turnaround there, you know, that she goes up there, she says a speech, and then they laugh at her. And then, you know, she shows this pad and, you know, says it's a bomb, and they kind of, oh, okay.
Yeah, I have to agree. I can't remember exactly how I said, but I thought, doesn't really seem that likely. I said, I'm not quite sure why Laurel's plan worked. Did kind of seem like hand wave.
I could see why it worked, but it wasn't. It was quick. Like it, I could see if they had set it up a little bit better, it would have been a little more effective. But it was a bit of a hand wave kind of thing. Or look what I've got. You've got to listen to me now. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not implausible, but it was sort of like on the border, I would say. I know there was something else I was going to say from Mark's voicemail. I can't recall what it was. I didn't write anything down. Was there anything you wanted to discuss from him?
I don't think there is anything else.
Well, to what you said, Mark, I've said it many times, and I'll say it one more final time. For all you do, this showcase is for you. I mean, Mark's voicemails, we've been so blessed with his insightful, succinct, and just thorough voicemails every episode. And you make this podcast better. I said it to your face, well, over Skype. But you know what I mean. I said it to you at the, you know, on the mid break. Thank you for all you do. We are planning to do another round table in about a month's time. And the only reason why we're waiting, well, there's a couple reasons why we're waiting that long, but there's some vacations going on and whatnot. And I'm shortly after we're done this season, I'm going to be moving. So I have to replace Ruthie too. Not here. Don't worry. She's not going away. And I'm not pulling your leg either. I do have to replace her, but on the other podcast. So, The Walking Dead talk through the rest of the first half of the season. I've been using guest hosts, and now I have to pick one. Because as you can see, replacing Ruthie is not easy because she's awesome.
Aw, shucks. Awesome sauce!
That's what we call yes on the other podcast. But anyway, so before The Walking Dead comes back, we'll be doing three episodes where we're trying out our various co-hosts, and then when we come back, we'll have the final selection. So the final countdown. Anyway, sorry, that's been I came up at work last week. It's been on my head ever since. So I've got that to do with the other podcasts, and I'm moving, so I'm going to be busy. So. And the other guys have some vacations going on. So, sometime in March, we'll do, that round table. But Ruthie and I have been talking, and I think we're probably going to start doing a, original series kind of, some episodes. I don't think we're going to be doing every episode of the original series, but we'll be going back and looking at some good episodes from, from that show, right? Is that the plan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
Do something. Yep.
And for that matter, if you guys have any ideas what you'd like to hear us do during the hiatus, let us know. And, you know, if we like the idea, we might do it. Might, you know. Didn't say we would. We'll figure something out, though. You'll hear us. You're not going to have to wait a whole year before you hear us. All right. Next is a voicemail from Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and all listeners to the Star Trek Discovery podcast. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback on the season finale of season one. I thought they did a nice job in wrapping up all kinds of storylines in just one episode and even connecting it to Captain Pike. I give it 8.5 out of 10 sex workers in the bar. Why not a higher score? Last episode I thought was very, very, very nice. And as in many season finales, it just sometimes goes too quick. Too many storylines have to be wrapped up. What I really didn't like was these nude dancers in the bar. The actors were okay, but just the makeup and everything around it was just not looking, not nice enough. And because the lighting in this episode, as well as in the last four episodes, was very, very nice again, and I made 15 screenshots again, of which I sent some to Brian. It's so beautiful, and just this in the bar was not so beautiful, and they could have made it. And on top of that, the whole scene with Georgiou having sex with two of those was just too much of non-Star Trek. Normally I don't have problems with that, but it doesn't fit into Star Trek. And especially not as in an episode where we can use our time better than with something like that. And I really wonder if Georgiou would have had time for something like that in a situation on Kronos. Not really the priority, but okay, you never know what's in her brain or other body parts. So that diminished my grading actually a lot. Of course, the end scene gives every Trekkie goosebumps seeing the Enterprise there. And I think, although all the discussions about the nacelles and whatever, I think they did a nice job to make this Enterprise a little bit in between the old Enterprise and a Discovery-like spaceship. So seeing the NCC 1701 was, of course, a yes. And as said, those nude dancers, as well as the sex scene with Georgiou, was a no. On the other hand, the scene just following that, where Georgiou was taking her gun and forcing that girl to tell where the shrine was, that was very nice. And also in a very, very nice close-up of Michelle Yeoh. What also was a yes was that Burnham Michael got reinstated as a commander by her father, by Sarek, and not in the ceremony. The ceremony was okay and was nice and was really Star Trek-y and real Federation-like. It was nicely filmed, but I really liked they chose that Sarek reinstated Michael in her rank. Okay, that was some first impressions. I only watched it once. All the best, and till next season. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, Fred, I'm going to give you a Showcase Award win, too. So, Fred, for all of your feedback and the wonderful images that you've been providing, I have to give you a Showcase Award this time. for a Lifetime Achievement Award. Anyway, couple things. You mentioned the sex scene. I think that that was kind of tribute to some of the other stuff that we've seen from the Mirror Universe. Like, it seems like the people from that universe are all very sexual. We see this in the Deep Space Nine Mirror and in Enterprise and in the original series. There was a lot of that kind of thing going on. So I think that was kind of where that was kind of going. I also really liked the Sarek scene as well. I liked that he was able to give her rank back and say that her record had been expunged and all that stuff, and was admitting that she is his daughter. I thought that was great. I mean, you know, earlier in the season, he wouldn't say it. He, you know, kept saying his ward, and even the previous episode kept saying that to Giorgio, that she was his ward.
My ward's better than your ward.
Yeah. So the fact that he was finally calling her his daughter, I think was fantastic. So I agree with you, Fred. I probably won't use all your images this time. I definitely will use at least one, maybe two. I'll try to use a one or two extra, but I will post a link in the blog post to where you can see the rest of Fred's images if I don't post them. If I get really ambitious, maybe I will, but it slows down getting the episode out. So for whatever reason, that putting those on the blog post takes a little bit of time. So, and I can already see that this episode's going to be a long one. So, actually, and Fred had some additional questions that he included when he sent in his voicemail. He says, first question, are we really going to see Captain Pike in season 2? What do you think? You think they're actually going to show a Captain Pike?
I'm not really sure, but to be honest, I was a little bit more trepidatious than excited when I saw the Enterprise, because I was thinking of all the ways it could go horribly, horribly wrong. I mean, it was cool, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, I was like, oh, I don't know about this.
Yeah, especially if they show the Enterprise with a bunch of high-tech stuff that we didn't see before. I could see certain...
Well, that's already going to happen because of the way that they've set up their... I mean, they already did that to the outside, so of course you're going to do it to the inside. But that's not even what I'm talking about.
The fact that it's another Pike and another... It, you know, probably won't be Bruce Greenwood from, you know, who plays it in the reboot movies. And it's probably not going to be Zachary Quinto as Spock, because I assume that we would see Spock. We may see Number One, you know, because if you don't know the references, watch the... It's the original pilot for the original series. It's called The Cage. And you'll see Captain Pike, Spock, who acts... with a little more emotion, and Number One, who's supposedly not human, although she looks human. I think we will, to answer the question. Next question, he says, why is the Enterprise in distress? Didn't look like it. Well, to that I would say that the ship itself may have not looked like it, but they definitely had some kind of communication issue. So, I mean, who knows? I guess we'll find out soon enough. Well, not soon enough. how much of the original series universe are we going to see? Or will Discovery go its own way? I don't know. I think, obviously, the Klingons are going to be different. Beyond that, I don't know. I just imagine everything will be updated. Who will be captain of this Discovery? Lorca 1 or Lorca 2 or even Harry Mudd? Or somebody from the TOS timeline? Well, I don't know how it could be Lorca 1 or Lorca 2, because I think they're...
They both dead.
I think they're both dead. It's definitely not going to be Harry Mudd.
Oh, no, definitely not.
I tend to think it's going to be someone new. I don't think it's going to be another character from you know, like Commodore Decker or something like that, because we never heard that he was on the Discovery. So, I can't think of, I don't know. There may be some captain that was in passing at some point, you know, some name we've heard in the original series, but I tend to think it's no one that we've ever seen before. So last question we answered already. Are you and Ruthie going to do a season wrap up podcast? Yes, we will. Just have to wait about a month. So, all right. Next.
Okay. Next, our next bit of feedback is from Nathaniel, and he says, I love it. Great ending with a great reminder of what it means to be Starfleet. I always enjoy Earth scenes because they're so rare, so the ending bits on Earth were really cool. And I think Sarek showed a hint of emotion when he was giving Michael back her commission. And finally, I think the Enterprise looked awesome. Just a respectful redesign that matches the modern aesthetic, making the ship look great. I agree.
I agree too. Next is Eddie. He says, this was a great ending to their first season. I would like to have seen more of Laurel convincing the Klingons to end the war. I agree with that. That seemed a bit rushed at the end. Also, why was Burnham making a speech to Starfleet? I assume that was a ceremony to present them with their awards. Was she the only one to make a speech, or were the other speeches just not shown? That seemed a bit odd to me. I understand this was how the writers remind the audience of what Starfleet stands for. However, in this setting, it came across like Burnham was preaching to them about how their leaders had failed to live up to their standards. I loved the ending. I thought the most we would get would be a hint of the Enterprise, but no. We got a nose-to-nose shot of the two ships. And to top it off, the TOS music. I'm now starting a rewatch of TOS.
Me too. Well, nothing is on during the Olympics. I think I'm going to try and watch a little bit of the original series.
That sounds like a great idea. Yeah, so I had the thought that there was probably some other speech. I could see why Burnham would make the speech, though, because, you know, everything kind of was centered around her, especially in the mirror universe. But I don't know. I tend to think that there was probably another speech. Maybe Cornwell did a speech. All right. Next is from Kyle.
Okay. Kyle says, what? Enterprise? Okay, from everything I've read and what was expected, this was not even close, and I like it. I felt after all the doom and gloom, Star Trek as we know it came back. Season 2, I'm ready. I really enjoyed the finale. I wish I could get a rewatch before your deadline and give some feedback, but just don't have time. Tilly is by far my favorite character this season. I just heart her. She reminds me a lot of Leeta from DS9, just quirky and adorable. Agree.
Yeah, I think she's great. All right, next is Clint, and in Clint's case, some of this could have been yeses and nos, but we ended up keeping it together with negatives and positives. So he says, after the great and wild ride through the mirror universe, I was a little disappointed in the season one finale. He starts off, he says, the negatives. The whole plan of destroying Kronos ended with a bit of a whimper. The Emperor, who has killed thousands, if not millions, maybe even billions, I would say, gave up the drone bomb too easily. She was ready to die on her ship in the mirror universe. Admiral Cornwell gave into the Discovery Bridge crew far too quickly and easily. One crew can change a plan that could end the war in a matter of minutes, even if it is misguided. The 24 Klingon houses caved into Laurel, making her the supreme Klingon leader with absolutely no fight in a matter of minutes. As I say on ESPN, come on, man. Positives. The scenes of the Orion outpost were very well designed and filmed, better than any village or city we have seen in any of the other series. Encountering the Captain Pike-led Enterprise as a cliffhanger was great. Gives plenty of possibilities for season 2. Yeah, and in fact, you know, maybe we're going to see some of the Enterprise in season two, much like we see the Shenzhou in season one, you know. So, you know, maybe we're going to see more of the Enterprise and see more of the 5-year voyage of Captain Pike. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But in any case, I am very interested, of course, in what we're going to see. So, all right, next.
All right, next it's James. He says, this episode is fabulous. They tie up loose ends with the Klingon War so that cannon thumpers really can't be too mad as far as time frames go. As noted in my yeses, it completes the redemption arc for every character and philosophy, and now the showrunners are free to weave a new story. Looking forward to see more appearances next season by Mudd and Georgiou. Something that also makes me hopeful is, did anyone notice that Jason Isaacs' name was still in starring credits? I'm holding out hope for future appearances of Lorca, whether it be Prime or that Mirrorverse Lorca somehow survived through the aid of the mycelial network. I know it would be kind of cheesy and some goofy Trekno babble would have to explain it, but stranger things have happened in Trek, and it would be worth it to have an antagonist of his caliber reemerge. As I've said before, I think he could rival Khan as the greatest Trek villain. One thing that I'm not a fan of is that they really haven't closed out the Spore Drive issue solidly. Just kind of mentioning that they're looking for a non-human interface doesn't really hammer it home for me. Anybody else a little annoyed with that? I'd have it in the nose, but they could readdress the issue in future seasons. Looking forward to season 2 and getting a great new arc and hopefully more of the NCC-1701. So just a weird thing because I'm goofy and I had to point it out. Did anyone notice the Klingon urinating in the alley? Was it me or were there two streams? I wonder what this does for interspecies dating. Oh my gosh. I did notice the peeing. I did not see two streams. I think that was in your head.
No, it wasn't in his head. There definitely were two streams. And this was actually hinted at way back in episode 5. Because if you remember, Lorca was when Tyler said that Laurel had taken a liking to him, it was implied that, you know, he was having sex with Laurel. And Lorca said something like, you don't even have all the right parts, you know, or you don't even have all the parts. And I think that's part of what Lorca was inferring, that they have two. And actually, that makes sense in a way, because we already know that Klingons have redundant organ systems. Like, they have two hearts and, you know, four sets of lungs and what have you. So why wouldn't they?
You mean two sets of lungs?
Yes, sorry. Two sets of lungs. Yes.
Because four sets, that would be a lot.
Well, I meant like four lungs, but two sets of lungs, yes. Anyway, they have redundant organ systems, so it wasn't just you. I believe I saw the same thing, and when I saw that, I thought of Lorca saying that thing. Anyway, so makes you wonder, though, about Worf. Because, you know, he married.
Yeah, I don't think that's, I think that's a new thing for this episode, or for this series, just like the new domes.
Well, yeah, that could very well be. All right, Tilly's next. She says, I'm going to give a big yes to the whole episode. All right.
Yes!
And I didn't put that in your yeses, so I left it for here. Loved it. I mean, there was a bunch of hand-wavy stuff going on that I didn't understand. Like, seriously, you're just going to go ahead and terraform a whole ecosystem without a buy or leave from anyone else? Okay then. And also, who threatens to blow up their own whole planet if people don't step in line? That seems a bit extreme, but whatever. I'm along for the ride. I can't wait until season 2. Good things are coming. She says, I give this episode and the whole entire show 10 out of 10. I love hearing my name said out loud on TV all the time now. I bet you do. Mm-hmm. Oh, one thing I forgot in my review, she added later. More of an additional comment, actually. It occurred to me the other day that now that Lorca's gone, there's no one left to take care of his tribble, which I'm assuming is alive, even though we didn't hear it chirp or see it move. Not a dead slash stuffed one. Since this is a tribble and they multiply like crazy, how come we only ever saw just the one? And with the revelation that mirror universe people eat other sentient beings, tribbles aren't sentient, but they sure are snack-sized. Had Lorca been keeping the tribbles around as snacks? Is that why there was only ever one around? Interesting. I would say maybe. But there was some talk about the tribble before on the Facebook group, and I thought that Laurel should get the tribble. And if you don't get that reference, tribbles don't like Klingons. So, and I guess Tyler Vok, whatever, Ty Vok, could also fit for that. So, all right.
Yep.
Let's move on.
All right. Kim says, wow, the Enterprise. That was fun. Okay. This episode. So much changed, though, it didn't feel like a lot happened. I like the symmetry of Burnham's character going from warmaker to peacemaker. I'm not sure I buy it 100% that the threat of one big bomb was enough to reunite a race bent on Federation destruction. I'm glad Tyler has moved on, because having him on the ship was going to be awkward and weird. But it's so odd that he went from Klingon to human Klingon hybrid, back to human, and then went off with the Klingons. That's a messed up dude. Good riddance.
I don't know.
A love lost there, I guess.
Yeah, I tend to think that he would be a decent ambassador, but whether or not they would actually put him in that role, I don't know. But I could see him being Federation ambassador to Kronos. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Todd is next. He says, I also need to see all images of all previous Enterprises, but I have been watching Star Trek Continues on YouTube, and I feel the look of the Enterprise at the end of Discovery is closer to the look of the Enterprise in the Star Trek Continues show than the original series Enterprise. Again, that's just my opinion, and I wonder what you all think. And I guess to that, you have to go watch those episodes, which I've recommended on here before. They are really well made, and you know, they use actual actors that can act.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so I couldn't say.
I think that the Enterprise was faithful to the original, you know, yet it updated it to the series. I had no problems with it at all. In fact, I loved the look of the Enterprise. It felt real and, you know, what I was used to, but at the same time, it looked updated. So I thought it was very faithful.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems with the design. I'm just worried about what they're going to do to the Star Trek timeline.
Yeah. All right, next.
All right, next is Rick from Cleveland, and he says, wow, that was an incredibly satisfying end to the season. Not perfect, but satisfying. Georgiou was everything you would expect out of the Terran Emperor. The me time bit was something else. Shows exactly where her priorities are. Sure, she'll get the intel, but she will take her time and enjoy herself. I'm sure we've not seen the last of her. I loved that Burnham was the one to bring Starfleet back to its ideals, coming full circle from her insistence on firing first in the Vulcan Hello. Her redemption arc has largely mirrored Starfleet's this season as they both forged their way back over the course of the war. I also found the relationship between Sarek and Burnham very interesting this season. In the Vulcan Hello, he was critical of her emotions, encouraging her to be more Vulcan. It seemed to mirror the same criticisms we would see with Spock throughout his relationship with Sarek. Burnham referred to him as father, almost out of spite. These past few episodes, since her return from the MU, there is a stark contrast in their interactions. Sarek encourages her to embrace her humanity, and there is a clear affection between them. She takes pride in calling him father. I was thrilled with Burnham's speech at the ceremony, her reinstatement of rank, and medals of honor for the crew. I only wish more of the bridge crew had been mentioned by name. More than usual were, but there were a couple left out. For the third episode in a row, I was up out of my seat cheering. As soon as NCC-17 was up on the screen, I knew what was coming. And the Enterprise was perfect. The design tweaks they made were perfect. I watched the episode again right away on the TV and brought that sequence up on my phone to grab some screenshots. It's exactly what I'd have done if I was tweaking the design. Next season can't come soon enough. I'll be watching Discovery a couple more times through, then the other four series over again. That ought to fill the void. Thanks for the podcast. Hope you keep it going in the off season.
Well, thank you, Rick from Cleveland. And I should say, since I'm from Cleveland, if we're not friends on Facebook, send me a friend request. We should get together. Anyway, yeah, we already answered that. We are going to keep going in the off season. We're not going to be going weekly for sure, but we will have, you will hear from us again. But I think a lot of what you said was right on the money. And I won't go into specifics because we've been going pretty long. So let's keep going. We got one more bit of feedback, and that is sort of a summarized thoughts on season one from Meyer. He says, I didn't hate this season, but man, I really didn't love it either. I feel like it lived in this weird space between overdeveloped and underdeveloped. The story wanted to be complex, but just ended up being confusing. The episodes were either filled with inane narrative exposition or boring, boring action sequences whose only purpose seemed to get you from the title sequence to the cliffhanger, which every episode invariably had. The characters were all put in these situations where they had to deal with epic issues like love, hate, betrayal, and fear, yet it all seemed trivial because I could barely remember their names half the time, because the writers hadn't given me a reason to give a boop about anything these characters were doing at all. I feel like this season was ultimately murky and confused and suffered from having too many cooks in the kitchen and the loss of a showrunner halfway through development. I feel like they had to somehow run with Brian Fuller's original concept, but also try to move the series in another direction simultaneously, almost like they got stuck telling a story they didn't have any interest in telling. I am excited that this season is now completed and out of the way, so we can move on to something a little more developed with hopefully less emphasis on spectacle and more emphasis on storytelling.
That really makes a lot of sense. Honestly, it did kind of seem that way. And it kind of felt like after they started going with the second half of the season, I guess, it kind of seemed different somehow. Like they, I don't know, like the new team took over or something. I don't know.
Well, one thing I noticed, especially from, you know, doing a partial rewatch over the weekend, is the names of the co-executive producers throughout the season kept changing. Like, I thought Joe Manosky, for example, and I'm sure you know that name, Joe Manosky, you know, was a writer on Next Generation. I think he was on, I know he wrote some of Deep Space Nine, but I think he was like on, he was mostly on Next Generation and Voyager. And of course, he wrote Darmok. Darmok and Jalad.
And Jalad at Tanagra.
There, Kim. You like that? Anyway.
I actually heard a character on a different TV show utter those words, and I lost my mind.
I remember. You mentioned that on The Walking Dead Talkthrough. I think it was Legends of Tomorrow. Is that right?
It was either that or Arrow. Yeah. It was Felicity. Yeah. And she's normally on Arrow, so.
Ah, okay.
But it could have been during I think it was during the crossover, actually. It was really cool. That was back when I still watched those shows. I haven't caught up this season, and I'm not sure I'm gonna, because I'm kind of They, it seemed like they all took a turn. Well, I stopped watching Arrow long before the end of the season, but it kind of seemed like they all took a turn that I didn't really like.
Mm.
And I haven't really gone back, and honestly, I haven't really missed it that much. Hmm. So, I don't know. Anyway.
Well, anyway, that's a sidebar. As an example, Joe Manosky, I thought that he had been on the staff all the way through, and I noticed that I think about halfway through, his name fell off the credits, and I had mentioned Jesse Alexander, who is going to be the showrunner taking over from Brian Fuller, and I don't remember the other guy's name, but on American Gods, he was a similar kind of thing. He had been on the first half, you know, and written a couple of episodes, and he was off. Ted Sullivan, who was on for most of the season, I don't think was on for the first two, at least two episodes. He may have came on episode three. Anyway, my point being that the writing staff kept changing. And, you know, that can't always be good, I think. And we all know that, you know, the showrunners took over, you know, mid-development. So, I mean, there may have been some of that. Like, one thing we never saw mentioned, and I was really hoping we would, the whole black badges on Discovery from episode three, Context is for Kings. We never went back to that, so we still don't know anything about who those guys were. Are they Section 31 or something else, or are they just not anything? Seems like they're not anything. It was a big red herring. People were wondering about that.
Yeah.
You know?
I really agree with his statement. I feel like they had to somehow run with Brian Fuller's original concept, but also try to move the series in another direction simultaneously. Almost like they got stuck telling a story they didn't have any interest in telling. That's kind of how it... I can see how you would see that. It's kind of how it seems to me. Like, they got stuck with the stupid Klingon design, and they had to go with it, and then you...
Yeah.
He left. Jerk.
Well, back when, you know, I was pitching to the shows, like, I pitched to Brian Fuller at least two times, maybe even three times, to Voyager. And if you're new, if you didn't listen to this podcast from the beginning, I'll just mention it now. And it's not why we keep talking about Deep Space Nine, but I sold a story to Deep Space Nine. You won't see my name in the credits, though. They just bought the idea for $500. But it was back in the 90s when they were taking, you know, freelance script submissions, and I submitted a script, and that was enough to get pitching to them, and they bought one of the stories I pitched. Combined it with another, and that became the episode titled Broken Link from season 4 of Deep Space Nine. But anyway, and I pitched to all of those shows. But anyway, I think Fuller made a mistake with the Klingons, but it's one of those things we have to live with now. And as far as the rest of it, I think pretty much this, from what I've heard, the season was mapped out before he left. At least the broad strokes were. So, but it'll be interesting, I think, to see what the co-showrunners come up with next season. I think they've done a great job. You know, some of your points there, Meyer, I know where you're coming from. I love the series, but it's not perfect. And there's definitely some things that I would change if I could. So, you got anything else you want to say about anything?
I don't think so.
Okay. I did not see a 47 in this episode, so if you did, send some feedback and let us know.
I keep forgetting to keep my eyes open for it.
Yeah, well, I did keep my eyes open for it, but I didn't see any. And, you know, most of the time when I'm watching the show, I'll be watching on a smaller device, so some of those things become more visible when you watch it on the big screen. Anyway, so to submit your feedback to us over the hiatus, especially, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And there you can submit text or audio. That's usually how we get our audio from people. Use the SpeakPipe widget, which I know Cyberman used. Or you can call our voicemail at 304-837-2278. You can also send us voicemail and written feedback to our Gmail, which is StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Most people post their feedback on the Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. And we've been getting lots of Twitter interaction lately. Follow us on Twitter. Our handle is StarTrekGSM. And if you didn't know, GSM stands for the Golden Spiral Media Network. You can also leave us some feedback by, if you use the TV Time app, we are the exclusive podcast for Star Trek Discovery on the TV Time app. We're very happy to be that. You can leave us some feedback there just by commenting on the episode when they post in the comments of the episode. So you'll see it listed there. So normally, this won't be true for quite a while, but the deadline usually for submitting feedback during episodes would be Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. But since we don't know when the next episode's going to be, it's going to be a while. We will most likely put something up on our Facebook group, letting you know when our next episode's going to be and what we're going to cover. But we are going to be doing a roundtable, so we would love to get your feedback about your impressions of the of season one, and we'll either cover it then or Ruthie and I'll do a separate episode. To support us, one of the best ways is if you subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choice. Of course, Apple Podcasts is probably the most famous. So you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple, and that'll give you a link to all of the podcasts within the Golden Spiral Media Network. While you're there, if you use Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating or review. That helps us get noticed as well. And we would like to thank Rick, the Comp Geek. I don't know if that's the same guy as Rick from Cleveland, but I thought maybe it was based on something you said in your review. So if it is, thank you. And if it isn't, thank you. Whichever you are.
Thank you.
The other thing, of course, is when we post an episode out, if you got friends that are watching the show, I know there's going to be a lot of people that pick up the show now that the whole season is available. Let them know about the podcast. Share our episodes, and we will post them at facebook.com/goldenspiralmedia, and those you can share. The Facebook group is closed, so those you can't share, but you can always take the link and share it to your peeps. And share our tweets. If you don't follow us at Star Trek GSM, please follow us. I think there are many other ways to support, and I think Ruthie and I will talk a little more about getting a Patreon together for this podcast. So that's something we'll do over the hiatus. We'll let you know when that's available, because, you know, if we get some support, we might do more episodes. So I'll say that. All right. Since we don't know when the next episode's going to be, we know it's season 2, episode 1. But our next episode is most likely going to be a roundtable with Mark from his voicemail and our original co-host, Adam. So it'll be the four of us again like we did just before the season came back. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.